Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your hosts, Drew Tignanelli and Tim Maurer.
And this is Tim Maurer, your co-host. Not with us tonight is Drew Tignanelli, and that means a couple things in particular. One, we will not have quite as quality information coming from the host chair, but two, we will have much better music during the breaks. So you have that to look forward to, but please do not tune out, because we have a very exciting show tonight on a very important day, I think we would all agree, in the world of both corporate, government, and personal finance. I want to introduce you to tonight's guests. We have with us Wilmer Stith III. He's a lifelong Baltimorean and vice president and fund manager at Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors. He holds the rigorous chartered financial analyst designation and co-manages the Wilmington Broad Market Bond Fund, as well as the Wilmington Short-Term Corporate Bond Fund. Look forward to having Will with us tonight. Tom Bombasuto is a native of the Bronx, New York, but thankfully moved to Baltimore in 1987, although I think he still might root for the Hankies, but where he now lives with his wife and five children. After spending many years at Wilmington Trust and its predecessors, often in conjunction with Will, I am very pleased to announce that Tom has recently joined the Financial Consulate as our Director of Investment Research. Tom also holds the CFA designation as well as the CFP and CHFC designations. If that's not enough alphabet soup for you, we might even have time to explain those later. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Will, it amazed me that you were actually able to make it to the show tonight. As a bond manager yourself, what was it like pulling away from your desk today? And maybe just for anybody who hasn't caught up with the news today, what happened?
It was a very exciting day, particularly in the afternoon, as it became clear that the Senate will, in fact, pass legislation to both lift the debt ceiling as well as open the government. And the Speaker of the House is insinuating that he would, in fact, bring that piece of bill to the House floor, mm-hmm. which would then garner enough votes to pass and then be signed, presumably by the president, before the stroke of midnight tonight.
So, in other words, it looks like the deal is done, although it hasn't been inked just yet.
I'm crossing my fingers. It's not over the end zone yet, but yes, very, very close and perhaps imminent.
Well, for folks like you who are day in, day out managing investments on a wide scale for the fund holders and the clients of your company, what is the attitude like right now? Are you guys just ready for Washington to cut it out and give us something that we can count on, something that we can plan for?
We sure are. You know, we've had a very tough slog of it over the last 5 years. The Fed has put tremendous amounts of liquidity in the marketplace. Really, the pedal is to the floor with regards to Fed policy and trying to ease monetary conditions. And yet, you know, employment growth is still somewhat stuck in first gear, frankly. And so this political instability, this cloud, if you will, this does not go away. And, you know, when we speak to corporate America, large businesses, small businesses, the takeaway we resoundingly hear is that all of this uncertainty, whether it's health care costs, whether it's tax changes, all of this is really putting a hamstring on employment gains.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately, it seems as though the best that we're going to be able to do out of this entire fiasco we've had over the last 16, 17 days is for a continuing resolution, which means we'll be facing the same issues either in January or February of next year.
Yeah, put it on your calendar.
Absolutely.
Hard to believe, isn't it? Well, you know, it's got to be a little bit funny for you. You've immersed yourself for your entire career in this realm of investing where most people expect and, frankly, hope this to be the most boring part of their investing, right? Bonds, people just want the capital preservation that bonds tend to offer over equities. They want the income that seems to be more consistent. But these days, you're like a rock star all of a sudden because this is where the crazy stuff is going on in the world of investing. Should we be concerned? After this bull run that we have had in bonds for a very extended period of time, and you can be specific with that, maybe 18, 20 years, Are we looking at a time where bonds aren't going to be quite so sexy for a while?
You know, as an American, quite frankly, I hope it is the case that we are going to start to see deterioration, particularly on longer-term bonds, as the economy restores itself, as we do get the unemployment rate down. You know, that's the way it's supposed to work. And so, yes, it has been a very exciting period. And, you know, we did see a little bit of that. You know, the Fed, the Federal Reserve, earlier this month and the last, I guess it actually started in June, suggested that it would sort of cut back on its quantitative easing measures, its QE3, if you will. Right now, I don't know if you realize they're buying $85 billion a month in treasuries and mortgages. And so the Fed said, hey, based on where we think the economy is going to go, we may taper or cut back our monthly purchases. And that spiked the 10-year Treasury yield up more than a full percentage point. Mortgage rates followed. You know, corporate borrowing costs were raised. And so it really caught the Fed a little bit off guard. Yeah. They were a little surprised at how much rates rose. But I think that does give you, unfortunately, a little purview of what we can expect once we do get that normalized trajectory of positive growth in the economy.
Normalized, that's a word that we have not used much describing our economy or the investing world much recently, hey?
Absolutely.
It's unfortunate. It is difficult. And Tom, while Will is pounding away at the basis points on a daily basis, trying to get the best job done that he can on fixed income, you're more often going to be dealing with clients coming to you and saying, hey, Tom, this is actually the part of the portfolio that I'd hoped would be really boring. You're looking at more of the full context of their portfolio and then in their lives, especially. What is the answer you give to folks wondering, is the part of my portfolio that I always thought was safe now the dangerous part?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had a call from a friend yesterday that said, you know, my mom just came into some money. What do I do with that? And, you know, you look at what rates are. Money market funds are at zero. You know, the money market fund complexes are losing money to have their funds even up and operating because they still have to pay people. They got to pay the accountants. They got to pay the managers.
Stop for a second and let's talk about that specifically, because this became a big issue in early 2009. I'm sure where both of you guys recall where the first money market and actually the first money market period, the reserve fund, broke the buck. Now, explain to folks how a money market can actually be losing money, but people aren't necessarily losing money in that money fund.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, the funds are paying expenses out.
Okay.
And so, you know, many of them are waiving funds. I mean, Will, I'm sure, is dealing with that in his complex, the Wilmington funds complex, and where they are earning a very low rate of return, mm-hmm. but they have some fixed costs, some overhead, whether it's producing the prospectuses, whether it's paying the accountants and the record keepers to do that. And the rate of return is not enough to generate income or to pay the managers. So, you know, when the Reserve Primary Fund broke the buck, you're really following the Lehman crisis. That really had to do with a credit issue mm-hmm. and the default. But right now you have the funds, you know, essentially, you know, they say losing money. You know, some of them aren't explicitly losing money, and some are. Some keep them up. And they're kind of a lost leader, praying that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates at some point and that we're going to get a positive rate of return on those money market funds on an absolute basis. So there will actually be a delay. You know, some of the funds won't actually show a return for a while because they're going to try and recoup and actually get paid for a while, and you won't see that happen. So you'll see the CD rates and other rates go up before the money market funds start to go up.
And, of course, the other option for those money market fund managers is that they take on more risk than they should, and as a result, they actually lose meaningful amounts of money the way the reserve fund did and had basically shut things down and not give distributions for an extended period of time. Tonight we have with us on Money, Riches, and Wealth, Will Stith and Tom Bonvasuto. Both of them are brilliant investment dudes who hold this fancy title, CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. In all truth, these guys really know what they're talking about at a time where we really need to know what the heck is going on, especially on this very day. But right now we're going to take our first break. Going to traffic with Terry Troyer.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is your co-host, Tim Maurer. Not with us tonight is Drew Tignanelli, and that's why, ladies and gentlemen, yes, we're listening to good music. Drew's not-so-favorite band, Mumford & Sons, They do happen to be one of my favorites. If you've not listened to them, I highly recommend it. We have with us tonight Will Stiff, CFA, Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors, and also the co-manager of Wilmington Short-Term Corporate Bond Fund. Will, I want to talk about that fund in particular and what's going on in your world momentarily. But we also have with us Tom Bombasuto, and I have the privilege tonight of introducing Tom as our, the Financial Consulate, the firm that Drew and I both work for at. Tom is our new Director of Investment Research. Tom, it's great to have you join us. And I'm just wondering, because you're probably not the only one doing some career changing these days, what's this process been like for you and your family over the course of the last few weeks?
Well, it's been exciting. I've got a better commute, that's for sure.
Yes, indeed.
And after driving downtown for 26 years, it's nice to just drive to Hunt Valley.
Yeah, and are you looking forward to all that the future holds? I know the answer to that, but gosh, this is a little bit of a turbulent time to be making this kind of change. From the perspective of your seat as a professional, what's it feel like these days?
Right. Well, it is a turbulent time, and you know, I came from an organization with a lot of resources, people like Will, to go to when you had questions, and so now I'm that resource to the team, and we've got a lot of great people, smart people at the firm, and it's exciting because this is a time where the individual has a lot of questions,
mm-hmm.
and they need help. They need somebody to hold their hand through these turbulent times, and I think we're the place to do that, and that's why I made the move.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the types of hand-holding that people need these days is if they're paying attention to their bond mutual funds, they may actually see, while everybody's hearing about the S&P 500 going up 17, 18, 20% this year, they're shocked to see that the safe, quote-unquote, part of their portfolio actually went down. In some cases, bonds are losing this year, right? What are some of the things that people can be doing, like in the fund that you manage, to reduce that fear and that reality?
That's a very timely question. You know, the first thing out of the chute is just to lower their maturity profile of the bonds that they have in their portfolio, making them have less what we call duration risk, or less sensitivity to a change in interest rates. So instead of buying a 30-year, 20-year, 10-year bond, maybe you buy a 3-year, 5-year, 7-year bond. And that's really the primary way to reduce that type of negative performance. The other way, quite frankly, is also buy bonds that offer higher amounts of income that sort of trade at spreads, we call them spreads, higher spreads over treasuries, namely corporates. At Wilmington Trust, we feel that investment-grade corporate bonds offer the most possibilities of excess return when you look at the bond market in a broad brush, so relative to U.S. treasuries, agencies, mortgages, asset-backed securities. The sector that we like the most, that we've liked the most for years now, continues to be investment-grade corporate bonds. And I think those two moves can really sort of ameliorate the negative effects of higher yields.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that – one of the big questions people have, justifiably so, especially after the 2008-2009 debacle, is to what degree can they count on the ratings agencies, the rating agencies that often are the ones weighing in on these corporate bonds where it means a little bit more than treasuries. To what degree do you trust that, and to what degree do you guys do your own due diligence to be sure that the corporate bonds you're buying you can count on?
That's a great question. You know, we learned long, long time ago that, you know, if you follow the credit ratings of a corporate bond, before you know it, you're basically a dead investor walking. You know, they're looking basically at the rearview mirror, and what we've trained our analysts to do over the last 10 years is to look at the front of the car, mm-hmm. the forward direction of where the car is headed. And so our analysts are looking to see whether or not a particular company continues to have pricing power, continues to improve its balance sheet. And we are by no way waiting for any decision on the part of a credit agency, and certainly not taking to heart any particular rating of the credit agency. We're mm-hmm. really sort of building each corporate investment that we make, sort of building it up from scratch and making sure that we've fundamentally understand all the risks associated with that particular corporate investment and whether or not we feel that's going to pan out lead to excess returns for our clients.
So have you been seeing a lot of inflows to the short-term bond fund these days?
We have been seeing inflows for the short-term bond fund as well as in our intermediate-term mandates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have been very fortunate to really been sticking to our knitting, to not really delving out in areas where we really could not put our arms completely around the risk that we're taking. You know, in the bond market, as you started off this the segue, there are a lot of different risks: interest rate risk, credit risk.
Mm-hmm.
There's also structure risk and call risk that investors should be concerned about. And so, you know, at the end of the day, we make sure that each of our analysts, portfolio managers, that they completely understand all the risks that they're undertaking in each and every corporate bond or mortgage-backed security.
Sure. All right, guys, we're talking a lot about the what is going on right now. I'd like to shift for a moment to the why. Tom, we're hearing a lot about interest rates rising these days. Well, what is it that precipitated that rise? What makes interest rates go down and then potentially go back up? And what's within the Fed's control and what might not be?
Right. Well, we've talked a little bit about the manipulation that the Fed has had on the market here. Some people have called him Helicopter Ben, Ben Bernanke, the chair of the Fed. And he's come out and he's buying securities, buying government securities every month. And there was what we call the taper tantrum that happened back in May, and where they came out and said, well, we're going to start tapering. We're going to stop reducing our purchases.
Okay.
And the market got a little nervous about that. And we saw the 10-year pop up quite a bit on that. Recently, they were going to go ahead and start to pull back on those purchases, and they decided not to, but the market was getting concerned what was going to happen with that. So you have the different parts of the curve. You've got the short end of the curve, what we call the yield curve. This is the structure of interest rates from overnight money out to 30-year money.
Okay.
And a normal curve is fairly sloped,
right,
you know, where you would have shorter rates for overnight money and higher rates for longer-term money.
Absolutely.
And, well, you know, we've seen that the bottom end of that curve has been, you know, positioned at zero. It's not going anywhere. And it's a fairly steep curve as you look out a little bit. And that is what the Fed has control of, that short part of the curve, less control of the long part. But they've manipulated that longer part down, partly to get the housing market. And we've had all-time lows in mortgage rates.
Right.
And that has helped, you know, get a little bit of the housing market going. But as Will mentioned earlier, you know, growth and jobs are really what's going to drive this economy.
Absolutely.
And we're not seeing that at this point.
Absolutely. Will, when we think about this tapering, the government or the Fed slowing their purchase of government treasuries to suppress interest rates from rising, the mere threat of a taper, we saw one of the biggest proportionate interest rate rises in the course of a month in the history of this country. So, is the taper coming? B, how soon? C, is it going to be slowed because of this recent crisis on the government level?
I think the taper is coming. I don't think it's going to be coming as soon as what the market perhaps expects.
Okay.
And the reason is really threefold. First, when you look at what the Fed came out with on their FOMC statement a couple weeks ago, they decided not to taper, and they said, you know what, the economy is not really growing at the trajectory that we expected it to. Two, financial conditions were a little too tight for us. That means interest rates rose too fast for their comfort.
Right.
And three, this political morass that we've been in.
Sure.
The uncertainties about that on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? They didn't taper at their September meeting, and now we're at a point in time where the political uncertainty, it's still there.
Yeah.
We're going to have to be facing
maybe even
this
more
in the next couple of months.
Right.
We're not getting actually releases from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, Commerce Department, CPI, the payroll report. And so we can't even track how the negative effects of this shutdown is having on the economy.
Right.
And so I think the Fed then is going to say, wait a minute, guys, we need to step back and we need to really make sure that we understand where the economy is going, where these economic statistics come out, perhaps be a little patient until we get over this new sort of benchmark, this new uncertainty period in February before they taper. So I'm actually now thinking that they're not going to be tapering until perhaps the beginning of 2014.
Do you expect to see interest rates rising nonetheless? Now that we've gotten through this most recent crisis, we are kicking the can down the road just a few months, and we could reasonably expect that the Fed may wait to do much tapering until that time frame. Do you anticipate seeing rates rise nonetheless? How much control does the Fed really have?
Yeah, I actually don't think that we're going to see rates move that much higher from where they are. And in fact, I think the easiest sort of course of action is for lower rates because of this uncertainty, because of the fact that employment growth is probably just 150,000 jobs a month, that the unemployment rate is stuck in the mid-7%, that the labor participation rate is at the lowest level since 1978. All those things argue that we're still in somewhat of a sticky wicket. And I think the fact that the Fed is going to refrain from pulling back on any bond purchases here over the year end, is this going to lead to lower rates, as inconceivable as that may sound to a lot of your investors? And, you know, we can say the 10-year Treasury note got to close to 3% when the talk of taper was at its peak. And, you know, we can see it's as of today, it's 2.67. I expect that to possibly get maybe a little bit below 2.5. Okay. But then eventually, you know, eventually the economy hopefully will start to grow more positively. Political uncertainty will go away by the wayside. We do get stronger payroll growth, stronger employment gains, and then we will start to see higher and higher interest rates.
For every question that you guys answer, I come up with about three more questions bouncing around in my head. But that might have just been the caffeine from that little trip to Starbucks before the show tonight. We have with us Will Stith and Tom Bombasuto answering all of my questions about what the heck is going on in the financial landscape, the economic landscape, and especially the bond landscape. But right now, we're going to go to Terry Troy with traffic.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is your co-host, Tim Maurer. Not with us tonight is Drew Tignanelli, but with us are two very, very interesting and brilliant guests, I think. Will Stith with Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors. He's also the manager for the Wilmington Short-Term Corporate Bond Fund, a fund about which people have a lot of questions these days. And Tom Bombasuto, who actually just joined the Financial Consulate as our Director of Investment Research. We have to be talking about the news tonight because it's big news. The Associated Press says Boehner, top GOP to vote for a deal. It appears that we do have a deal. It appears that it's just going to be a matter of theatrics over the course of the next 12 hours or so to get it inked and to move forward in this debacle. But Will, damage is done. This is not the first time we have kicked this one down the road, and this is not a small can either. What are the implications that it has, maybe in your world on Wall Street, but if you're comfortable even more broadly, the way the rest of the world looks at us? They're like, what's going on with you guys? You're the world's currency reserve. And you can't even get your stuff together.
Well, Tim, it's not good news. It's not good news at all. You know, the first time they went down this road, quite, I'm sure, to everyone's surprise, treasuries all along the yield curve actually rallied when we came up to the debt ceiling. And it was as if nothing really occurred. It was no big deal. This time around, time two, you know, we had some very large buyer of U.S. treasuries from the Chinese and other Asian countries that are saying, hey, wait a minute, you guys really should be getting your house more in order.
Yeah.
You know, we really are expecting, you know, a higher bar,
sure,
as it were, in terms of your legislative process. And then also, we've been recently seeing a deterioration in the U.S. Treasury bill market, where those bill yields that Tom quoted earlier, one
stuff,
basis
right?
point, two basis
sure.
point, very short term, actually spiked up to almost 0.5%, the highest level in almost in 6 years or so.
Yeah.
And so that's when we got, you know, the second time. The third time we go through this, you know, I think it's anyone's guess, but I, you know, being somewhat of a cautious betting person, I'd say it's not going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think anybody in the leadership of the Chinese government sent over an email at any point over the course of the last couple of weeks and said, hey, guys, you know, we hold a couple U.S. treasuries. Maybe you could do this a little bit better. You think they're putting some pressure on us?
They may have had those backdoor communications, but they've also had, you know.
Wouldn't you if you were them?
Absolutely. They've also had articles in the Wall Street Journal being quoted as saying this is getting a little bit out of hand.
Yeah. So, Tom, let's now turn to some of the more practical applications for this. So when we see, according to Will, and I agree 100%, it looks like we may see interest rates stabilize from the run that it appeared that they were on a month ago. Maybe that gives us all a little bit more time to figure out how we're going to be dealing with a rising interest rate environment. What can investors do to hedge themselves against a rising interest rate environment where people probably, especially these listeners as educated as this group is, they're anticipating they're going to go down in value. My bonds are going to lose money because that is what happens when interest rates rise. What can investors be doing to hedge against that?
Right. Well, we talked a little bit about, you know, the product that Will's involved in with this is the Wilmington Short Corporate Fund. And that's a shorter duration, as he mentioned. So you're getting more conservative in terms of your interest rate risk. So you can buy shorter term bonds. You know, the money market's still not returning anything. The CDs are nothing right now. It's pathetic. So, you know, the corporate bonds, you can get into some of those. There's also what we call floating rate securities. And so there's a variety of those and you have to be careful what you're buying. You have to make sure you understand those securities. There are some that are tied to, you know, LIBOR and other kinds of interbank rates like that, or even things like the Fed funds. But some of them are high yield investments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, back in the year like 2008, you know, some of those securities went down 30%.
Sure.
So while you were collecting a higher yield, you were also losing a lot of principal on those. And then there's other kinds that are out there that I know that Will's gotten involved in. And maybe, Will, you can speak to a little bit about how you've structured your funds and how you've made adjustments and maybe some different things you're doing to protect against this rising rate environment.
Sure, Tom. So in the Wilmington Short-Term Corporate Bond Fund, we've actually been adding floating rate notes that are tied to three-month LIBOR. We actually have about 20%. Now, these are securitized, investment-grade, very liquid corporate bonds
okay.
that float. So they have less interest rate risk than a five-year fixed piece of paper,
okay.
fixed corporate
Hold
bond.
Hold on. We got to stop the presses
sure.
for a second. I've just heard the word float or floating three times within the last 30 seconds, and I think we need to clarify, what is a floating rate fund or security, and what does it do differently than regular fixed income securities?
So the security actually changes its coupon on a periodic basis, and its coupon is based on a reference index, a very short-term index.
Okay.
The most ubiquitous index around the world is something called LIBOR. It's been in the papers recently,
yeah.
gotten the black eye.
Not for all good reasons.
It's been, but it still is a very fundamental index within the bond market. And so when you buy a floating rate note, Tim, what you're actually getting is a coupon that adjusts every 3 months until it matures. And so let's say if interest rates start to move up a lot or the Fed starts to raise the Fed funds rate,
okay.
well, guess what? You're going to be somewhat insulated from all that pain of higher rates because your coupon is going to float at higher and higher levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of add these to the portfolio when we think the Fed is about ready to raise interest rates. Now,
so in other words, just to make sure I'm understanding,
sure.
floating rate funds or securities should be actually going up when interest rates rise, whereas regular bond instruments should be going down.
In price. So they should be going up at a very little bit.
Small increments.
Yeah, that's right. They certainly
Especially
should not
your
be going
fund,
down.
The short term.
That's correct. Now, typically you buy these types of securities when you think the Fed's about ready to raise the Fed funds rate, when you think the Fed is going to start taking away the punch bowl from the party,
mm-hmm.
as it were. So we've added these securities to our funds because when we had all that consternation about to taper or not to taper, a lot of these floating rate bonds came on the marketplace at what we thought were very compelling valuations, and so we were able to put them in the portfolio, and we're able now to clip a very significant yield on these assets than we would otherwise because of that sort of mispricing, as it were, in the marketplace. So on a more normalized
mm-hmm.
path, as it were,
mm-hmm.
it may be a little premature to be adding floating rate notes
right.
at this juncture. You know, we don't expect the Fed funds rate to really go higher, possibly in 2015.
Yeah, but we know they're not the only ones that have any control over this. Now, I will say, guys, one thing I want to add really quickly is that many of the ways that people are voicing as opportunities to hedge against a rising interest rate environment do actually increase the risk or volatility of the portfolio. So when someone says, for example, well, what you need to do is shorten your durations, well, that's fine. That's not increasing the risk. That's lowering it. But then you should also add equities with dividends. Now, that may very well work, but it also is inherently increasing the risk of the portfolio. So people do need to remember, at the end of the day, shortening durations and possibly even as short as the money market that is making nothing may still be the way to go. We've got plenty more. Actually, we just have a quarter of the show left. It's amazing how quickly it's been going from Will Stith and Tom Bombasuto. But right now, I am going to tell you something that you need to know. You need to know that supposedly we have a deal. We'll know for sure when we wake up tomorrow morning. But there is a vital difference between the government shutdown and the debt ceiling threat. The government shutdown is to the debt ceiling threat as political squabbling is to political suicide. I mean, no disrespect to the many individuals who are negatively impacted by the shutdown. You are being unjustly abused like the single shovel in a sandbox argument. But I can only muster so much sympathy for the campers holed up outside of the Grand Canyon waiting to begin their rafting trip. All of us, however, and the full faith and credit of the world's currency reserve nation, have been held hostage in a high-stakes game of political chicken regarding the newly dubbed debt ceiling debacle of 2013. Okay, now I'll drop the SAT logic, metaphors, and hyperbole to explain the fundamental differences between the government shutdown and the debt ceiling threat, the two dominant news headlines of the day. The government shutdown occurred because of disagreements in Congress over the proposed budget for the coming, now current, fiscal year beginning on October 1st, 2013. It's as if you and your spouse can't agree on how your household income should be spent. We haven't actually had a budget passed by Congress for years, but continuing resolutions were passed each time the moment of truth arrived, read can-kicking, to maintain the levels of preceding budgets. This time, they didn't agree on a continuing resolution. Until now. In short, the government shutdown may not show D.C.'s best side and is an annoyance to those of us not receiving the government services that come out of our paychecks, but it's likely to be a forgotten thing a couple days from now. The same can't be said regarding the debt ceiling issue, however. The debt ceiling issue is not a direct consequence of the government shutdown, although it certainly is tangentially related to our inability to pass balanced budgets that actually take in the amount of income required to pay all of the government's bills. Since we spend more than we make as a country, we must go further into debt to meet our expenses. The debt ceiling, then, is our credit limit set by Congress, which currently stands at $17.3 trillion with a T. It's the equivalent of you maxing out your credit cards and going back to the credit card company asking for an increase of your limit. The biggest threat if we sail through the October 17th without an agreement, which it appears we won't, when it is estimated that the U.S. Treasury would run out of necessary funding and lack the power to borrow anything more, is that our worldwide creditworthiness would come seriously into question, which could precipitate a demotion from our long standing as the world's currency reserve. What does that mean? Currently, international business is conducted in U.S. dollars. When foreign countries buy oil, soybeans, or steel, their currencies are exchanged into dollars to complete the transaction. This has given the U.S. dollar more strength than it likely deserves, as foreign countries stockpile our cash to spend as needed. Not raising the debt ceiling at this time could even mean not paying interest to those who hold our U.S. debt obligations the world over, for the first time, ever. The corresponding lack of confidence in our political process and uncertainty of our financial capabilities could very well pull us back into a recession that many feel like we haven't left yet, and the longer-term implications are even worse. But instead of freaking out over all of this apocalyptic news as though we have an impact on D.C. policy decisions over which we have no control, and applying our attention to those items we can control, how much we make, save, spend, invest, and allocate. That is something you need to know.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is your co-host, Tim Maurer. Not with us tonight is Drew Tignanelli, but he's almost certainly listening to the show. He will be. And so, Drew, I just wanted to remind you that that last track on this bump was indeed Mumford & Sons. I believe that was number 7 on the mix CD I made you that I know you've just about worn out by this time. Drew Tignanelli will be back next week. And in addition to Jack Friel, who is the rock star of all Social Security. A lot of Social Security questions bouncing around these days, too. That's normally when the phone lines light up like crazy. By the way, we did have a couple folks call in tonight. I apologize that we were not able to take your calls, but we've got so much information floating around right here inside the studio that I think is very important for everybody to hear. We just kept on rolling, so I apologize if you're one of the few who called in. Again, with us tonight is Will Stith. He is with Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors. He's a vice president and fund manager of the Wilmington Short-Term Corporate Bond Fund. And Tom Bonvasuto. Tom Bonvasuto was with Wilmington Trust and spent many very happy and productive years there, and we're very happy that now he's with us at the Financial Consulate as our Director of Investment Research. And guys, you know, one of the questions that I've been asked the most over the course of the last, really, month, as all of this shut down and debt ceiling stuff was starting to bubble up, was, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, I said my favorite answer is nothing. That this is another brand of uncertainty that we have been dealing with forever in our investing, and we will be dealing with forever in our investing. And heck, maybe it's partly because I hate the notion of shifting our investment philosophy every single time the knuckleheads in Washington start wrangling heads the way they have been recently. But to that point, Tom, what are the things that people should be focused on to begin with? Maybe this is the wake-up call.
Yeah, Tim, that's a great question. And I really say that people should stay the course. The challenge is most people don't have a course. They have to set
you have
a course.
To have a course before you stay it? Is
exactly.
That what you're saying?
Exactly. And you have to know where you're going. And so this is a reminder to the things you should be doing. You know, the poor government workers that have been out of work, they didn't know if they were going to get paid. I don't believe they're getting anything today. So what are they doing to pay their bills? What are they doing to pay the mortgages in the interim? So this is the reason we talk to people about having a cash reserve set aside. So if this doesn't get them to do it, I don't know what's going to do it.
Yeah.
We really need to get people to remember, you know, why do we invest and how do you invest different pools for different points in time? So people have to reevaluate their financial situation, and this is an opportunity. Crisis brings upon change.
Yes.
And so this crisis for the government workers, but it should be a wake-up call to everyone to expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen at our jobs, in our families on any given day of the week. And so we need to be prepared for those different things in a variety of ways, and working with their financial advisor, people should be able to set that course and then stay the course through these tough times.
Yeah, you know, in addition to having that emergency reserves of cash, I mean, it's amazing how much better people can sleep at night when that cash is present. But in addition to that emergency reserves inside of savings and checking accounts, I like seeing higher allocations of cash that are generally considered appropriate in portfolios, investment portfolios. So either way, you know, if things go crazy, it's the only thing that's not going to lose money, like in 2008, right? The entire asset allocation chart basically tumbled in 2008, whether we liked it or not. Cash was pretty much the only thing that was safe, truly safe. But in addition to that, it's also dry powder, so that when you actually have some good investment ideas, which we're struggling to find more and more these days, that's when you can put that cash to use. Well, we've talked a little bit about this. Bonds, you manage the full spectrum of bonds, so strategically, what are some of the things that people can be doing in the face of the uncertainty we now have?
Well, definitely we feel that you should be sort of getting higher amounts of income than the U.S. Treasury market offers by going into investment-grade corporate bonds, and also focusing more of what we call the belly of the yield curve, or that five-year maturity space, because quite frankly, the Fed has stated explicitly that it has no intention of raising the Fed funds rate anytime soon. Looks like it's probably not going to happen until the middle of 2015. And so, therefore, you're really getting a lot of shelter from a significant upward move in yields in that shorter end of the yield curve. And to us, on a risk-adjusted basis, the sweet spot is that five-year maturity range.
Interesting. Interesting. But you also have a keen interest in the Wilmington Short-Term Corporate Bond Fund. What is the average duration in there? Do you know where that stands today?
Absolutely. Right now it's at a 1.65. So for every 100 basis point or 1% change in interest rates, if interest rates go down, the fund will garner a 1.65 positive rate of return.
Gotcha. And in addition, you said that you do have some short-term floating rate instruments inside of there that should also help balance out any interest rate fluctuations?
We do, and perhaps more importantly, we have about 95% in investment-grade credits that we know very very well. Credits like McCormick Spice, like Verizon, cable companies, sectors of the corporate bond market that we think are very well insulated, that have pricing power, sound balance sheets, managements that have been going through various economic cycles. So that's really where we're really placing those types of bets in that fund.
And like you said earlier in the show, you guys are not just purely blindly counting on ratings agencies to give you the best advice. You're doing your own due diligence. Will Stith with Wilmington Trust Investment Advisors. Will, how can folks learn more about what you're doing, especially with the short-term corporate bond fund?
Well, they can go to wilmingtonfunds.com. It's a site that has a lot of our articles, investment commentaries on various trends we're seeing in the market. It has all of our portfolios, both our funds, rather, both fixed and equity.
And the symbol, Will?
The symbol for the particular fund is MVSTX. That's Mary Victor Sam Tom X-Ray.
Great. We have with us tonight Will Stith and Tom Bombasuto. Thank you both so much for joining us, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you tonight. Next week we'll have Jack Friel, Social Security. This is Tim Maurer with Money, Riches, and Wealth saying God bless.
Stimulating talk around the clock. Breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.